This is the Travel Angel Show. We're just here to talk about great travel. I'm Cindy Paulos, and this is Jerry Downer, and we've got Bob Stone here with us, and we're going to have Joseph Rosendo calling in, and Tom Vendetti's going to join us, and this is going to be a very inspiring show. Hello, is this Joseph?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Joseph. We were just talking about you. Were your ears ringing?
No, they weren't. What were you saying? Good things, I hope.
We were just talking. Bob Stone is here, and he was talking about his trip to Bhutan and gross national happiness. So it's me, Bob Stone, and Jerry Downer from Kahani Travel. Aloha.
Aloha to all of you.
And you know, it's so exciting. First of all, I want to say congratulations, because you were nominated for an Emmy as well, right?
Yes, the show was nominated for 3 Emmys this year. That makes our 5th Emmys, is that right? I believe so. 8 Emmys, excuse me. That's 8 Emmys we've been nominated for. We won one, and I've been nominated for my 2nd Director Emmy. So it's exciting always to be recognized by your peers. And but we don't do Travel Scope for awards, you know. We do Travel Scope to communicate and to reach people and introduce people to people and to try to make a positive difference in this world. And so we're pleased to be recognized by our peers, of course. And it's a great honor, but Travel Scope would continue to do what we're doing no matter what.
And you've been on the air with Travel Scope on PBS how many years now?
Well, we're about to release our 7th season of Joseph Rosendo's Travel Scope, the PBS show. And so that's where we are, 7 seasons with that. You know, I've been a travel journalist since 1980 and had my own travel radio show for over 22 years here in Los Angeles and aired in several other places, but you know, the television show has been going on for 7 seasons.
And I'm really excited about the fact that you've also got a wonderful trip coming up that you're going to be taking with a few lucky people, a private tour of Southeast Asia coming up September 13th through the 21st.
Yeah, we're really excited about that because one thing, we don't have to take our camera crew with us, so that'll be great. And secondly, it's destinations that we've never been to, Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia, the extension that is to northern Vietnam, all of these wonderful places that we've dreamed about going to, and here we are being able to go with people who are like-minded about travel and wanting to experience cultures and wanting to see things that really are completely different than their day-to-day life.
Well, it's going to be you, Julie, and a small group of people. This is a very private tour, right?
Yeah, it's very few people. The minimum that will be on the trip is 8 people, and the maximum is 15. So as people start to book, you know, it gets less and less people are available, and less space is available. But we look forward to having a very intimate group of people that we're all sharing experiences with. And of course, you know, this is what Travel Scope is about, is always had a vision about how to travel in the world in a positive way and to have the best experiences and have made a career out of that, and to be able to actually share it with some of our viewers who feel who appreciate the way we are in the world, the way the show proposes that they be in the world, is going to be exciting. We're going to be able to have some great experiences together, and Julie and I will be unencumbered by our cameras. We'll just be there.
You're talking to a cameraman here. Now, Bob Stone's been doing camera work for...
they're fun to travel with, but as Bob knows, you know, work is work, and this will be work without all the responsibilities of thinking every second about how this is all going to translate. And we're just going to be able to take it all in along with our other guests and have it affect us in a very personal way. You know, the challenge with Travel Scope is to do that in the production environment and to have authentic, wonderful interactions with people while you're carrying a camera, while you're walking, while you're, you know, putting a mic on people and while they have a big boom mic over their head. And that's tends to intimidate some people, but we've managed to do it now for 91 shows. So we're pretty excited about that.
Oh, Bob was just back from Rwanda. Was it Rwanda that you were at?
in January, Rwanda, and I was back on Maui for a day and a half, and then off to Cambodia.
But he had an experience as a camera person you will appreciate. He had a translator, and they were talking to some of the people who had terrible, very traumatic experiences there in Rwanda, and he set up his camera. Well, tell the story about what happened, Bob.
Which one?
The avocado tree.
It was the last shot of the day. The sun's kind of headed down, but I've got a fairly new Sony camera, so I know it'll handle the low light. We're set up. We're in the middle of this interview, and suddenly, just out of the sky, drops an avocado out of this tree, hits on the viewfinder on the camera, and doesn't break it off, you know, so we're able to keep filming and stuff. But then later I checked, and there was a crack in it. It's still out for repair now. But
anything can happen when you're traveling, and you never expect that. You know, things happen out of the blue, which I guess sometimes in outtakes it might be funny, but maybe not so funny when they happen. But Bob also has been to Angkor Wat with Tom Vendetti, and there's the Cambodian Film Festival that has been set up by Tom, and this is the second year. You went this last year, right?
Yeah, this is our second year, the Angkor Wat Film Festival. That we set up there in Siem Reap. It's held at the Sofitel Hotel, a five-star hotel. And it's for free for anyone who wants to come to it. So it's a pretty amazing experience. The first year, we're kind of light on locals. You know, it's mostly expatriates and government workers and that kind of thing, those type of people. And then this last year, we're happy to see that the skin color's gone a little darker. So a lot of the local people are starting to get the message there, because there is a stigma about this, you know, five-star hotel, and local people going to that is just something they don't do. And we're starting to break down that barrier so that they're seeing that it's okay to come to this five-star hotel and watch movies for free. And we'll be doing our third year next February, and we'll be introducing 3D. We're going to have some 3D films there, and we're working on the screens and the projectors and all that right now. So we're just expecting, you know, we're doing a lot of kids movies and family movies and that kind of thing, and it should be a pretty amazing experience for people who've perhaps never even seen a film on a screen before, and they'll get a chance to come in the ballroom and see a 3D adventure. So we're looking forward to that in February.
Now, I wanted to talk to you, Joseph, about Bhutan. I mean, I was talking before we started the show about the fact that I've been to Tibet, and that was, well, gosh, 13, 14 years ago. But Tibet wasn't really like what I thought it was going to be in my imagination. It was, and then when I saw the movies, actually, that Bob did and Tom did on Bhutan, I thought, that's much more like what I thought Tibet was going to be like. But there was such a heavy Chinese influence in Tibet that it really was very different than what we might imagine. We still don't imagine the heavy-duty Chinese military presence that you see when you are in Tibet. But Bhutan, and I think it might be interesting for you and Bob to have a conversation about some of the enlightening and wonderful parts of Bhutan. Now, did you go twice, Joseph?
Well, we were there for 2 weeks, but we just our first trip to Bhutan, and certainly Bhutan exceeded my expectations, and here's a country that is squeezed in there between two of the largest countries and biggest resource users in the world, and they've managed to survive and keep their culture intact, not without effort. And I was particularly impressed and touched by the experience of being surrounded by prayer at all time. You know, the prayer flags and prayer wheels and the chants and the monks and the monasteries, and then the nature kind of picked up the chants as well, as far as I could see, and you have these beautiful natural the wildlife, the beautiful black-necked cranes that we saw, and of course the spectacular scenery of the Bhutan Himalayas, and all that together. If you can't have a spiritual experience in Bhutan, you just are your soul must be just completely gone, because I couldn't avoid not being touched. And the people are so accessible; they seem fearless in being able to relate to you, and not intimidated by your position and their position and not really seeing things in that way. So I didn't feel ever that anyone was intimidated by our presence, and our presence is pretty heavy-handed with our cameras and all the sound equipment and everything. But we try to walk lightly, and they appreciated that, and we had some wonderful experiences. Yeah, it's the whole time, our whole trip there was a spiritual experience. So it's hard for me to point out any one thing. We went to a festival and we participated in that, and watched how the people were patient and could sit there and in a sort of meditation and watch the dances, which could seem to Westernize to be repetitious. But, you know, in our ADD world, it was wonderful to see people who could just be still and appreciate what was happening around them.
How did you go about getting your visas, and did you go through the government to get them for the filming, and what was that process like?
Okay, sure, of course. You know, Julie, my wife Julie, who's the producer of Travelscope, and is a genius at working with people and working out our itineraries and all the arrangements that we need to have in order to be able to go somewhere and capture the experience. And so, yes, she had to, of course, you have to work with the government, since, you know, the government controls travel to Bhutan pretty tightly, and, you know, in a positive way, I think. I mean, you know, there's a daily fee. You know, you have guides with you. You do have to, your fee does include your rooms and your food and a three-star accommodation and a transportation and a guide, and it does include all of that, and a portion of that fee goes towards the reduction of poverty, as I heard it told to me. So obviously some of the government programs to help people as well. So it was a process. It took well over a year, almost 2 years,
wow,
to get it to happen. But, you know, things move slowly, but it did happen, and it's certainly one of the best travel experiences I've ever had, and certainly we felt equally blessed to be in a position to actually capture that and then bring back the images, and also, of course, be able to tell the story of Bhutan from our perspective. And that's, in fact, we're finishing up editing on those shows, and those will be two of the shows that will be released later as season 7 starts to be sent out to all of the PBS stations around the country.
Well, we've just been joined by Tom Vendetti, who is a filmmaker, and I think how many films now? You've done When the Mountain Calls, was the latest one, but you've done now 4 films on?
For PBS?
Is it 4 or 5 films that you've produced?
Well, 7 have been 7. On PBS now, yes.
Yeah, and we were just talking with Joseph, Tom, about the experience of getting the visas and working, but at the same time having this wonderful real experience, and of course you have to be able to be, I say, commune in communication, and I think if you really are able to communicate with people, that comes across on the videos. I know and when I saw your film, Tom, I did feel there was a genuine communication and caring, and there was a story to be told. There is a story to be told about how different this culture is from a lot of what our culture is like, right?
Well, I just walked in from a different culture. I work on the psych unit at Mola Kini, so. but anyway, yes, it's very different and intriguing, beautiful, and for me, I was very skeptical before I went there. I heard this, you know, this thing about gross national happiness and how that could possibly exist anywhere in the world in this day and age. And I came back a believer.
Really?
And
yeah.
Again, it was because of the people, their culture, and what they're truly about influenced my life in a big time, mm-hmm, after the experience.
Well, and the whole government is, you know, has those 4 pillars that they put together. So when you have, have the leaders of the country sort of steering it this direction of, you know, preserving culture and preserving the environment and working to create an environment of happiness, that, you know, I think a lot of other countries could learn a lesson from that.
I do too. And preserving the culture and the environment, because I know you've been to China before, haven't you, Joseph?
Yes, I've been to China several times now.
And when I went there in 1989, there was not that much pollution. There was some, but the pictures I've seen recently of some of the areas with the pollution, now that they have this overload of cars, it's pretty shocking about what's happened to the environment in some of the bigger cities, at least.
Yes, my stepson and our daughter-in-law live in Beijing, are about to leave. They spent 2 years being posted from the State Department. They work for the State Department. And it's truly horrendous. The levels of pollution are astronomical, and the what they have to go through to protect themselves as best they can with, you know, truly gas masks and air filters.
Wow.
And spending thousands of dollars on devices to make it possible to even live there.
Wow.
In your apartment, much less out on the street.
Oof.
It's just a sign of it's funny to say it, but it's like a sign of capitalism gone wild. Even though it's supposedly a socialist communist country, the level of capitalism there and the rampant materialism there that I witness is off the scales compared to even some of the most highly developed countries, including the United States. I mean, it was pretty horrific. I think better places in China to travel, and it perhaps wouldn't be as bad as Beijing. It's probably at the top of the horror list as far as the environment is concerned and the people's necessity to live in such a ruined environment. But there's other problems with China besides that, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly is a very, very bad one, and it's not a place we readily advise people to go to, actually.
When I was talking with all of you about the Bhutan, and I remember seeing the images that were captured in the video, that the movie that you and Bob did, Tom, the beauty of the mountains and the freshness of the streams were really, I mean, it came across, it was just very vibrant with energy. And so how are they handling the situation in Bhutan that you got, Joseph, and that you and Bob got, about how they're going to keep it from becoming ruined as time goes on and more people want to come? What's their way of trying to preserve it? Was your sense of that?
Well, again, that's the big question. And they're basically doing it through, again, these four pillars that the government's promoting. And that's to have a government that's honest, transparent, economic stability, preserving culture, and the environment. And they're very, very committed to that. I mean, when you go there, you'll see that they're all dressed in local clothing in the cities. And the buildings that they build are very much built in a Buddhist style. So they claim that that's their identity. And by really focusing on that, that's their goal in terms of preserving it. However, since the television's been radio, the internet has been introduced, they're
and
having
more
problems.
People, and more people coming in.
And more people, right.
Mm-hmm.
So they're having problems with drug abuse now.
Are they really?
Domestic abuse, and a lot of psychological problems are starting to emerge.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that. When did you get back, Joseph?
We went last November, so at the end of last year.
Very recent.
What was just said is indeed the case. That is a gigantic challenge as the modern world has come into their life. They are being affected by that, particularly the young people, and it's difficult for the government to continue to travel the path it is. But it's interesting to me that one of the pillars of gross national happiness is good governance, and it's amazing to me that there's any government anywhere who would say that one of the ways that we're going to be happy is by having good government, because it doesn't seem like good governments promote good government anything but. And here is at least a government that is saying this is an essential part of the people's happiness, is to have a government that governs well and governs with them in mind, and faces the challenges that people are, you know, are being put up against them, the people, and deals with it in a way that, and you know, it's beautiful that it's done with their spiritual foundation is so strong, and that they come from that place, and I think that's probably one of their strengths, and probably I'm hoping will be their key to surviving the onslaught of the developed world and modernity and capitalism and materialism, which is around us all, and we all have to be mindful about how it affects us in our daily life, and they just do it as a country.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were there, Tom and Bob, that was just before they switched, and I think was it the king or the prince that was just has now not there was a change right in the roles, and is it the son now in charge?
Correct.
Yeah. So that happened. It had not occurred, right?
We were just there in 2005.
Oh my gosh! I didn't realize that long ago.
I think the king, what they call it, abdicated.
You're right.
Yeah. I think it was in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're, from what I understand, they're switching over to a constitutional monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
So that there isn't actually a king in power as there was. But it was interesting that the people were really fighting that because they love the king.
Really? They didn't want him to abdicate?
Yeah. They liked the way that things were. And he was taking a look at the situation and saying, you know, in order to move into the 21st century here, in order to be a part of the modern world, we need to change things.
Mm-hmm. I love the fact that the king said that ultimately came to that decision saying the monarchy is not really a sustainable government, and basically wrote himself out of a job, and as you say, abdicated in favor of his son, who, with the understanding that his son would move the country towards democracy. And when we were there, while we were there, the first government, democratically elected government, was in power for the first time ever in the history of Bhutan.
Wow. And are there taxes paid? Do people pay taxes? Are you aware of taxes being paid there or not?
I'm sure they do, but I'm not aware. I know that a percentage, of the money that we pay towards traveling in the country goes towards, obviously, the sustainability of the government and the people as well. But I'm sure they pay taxes, yes.
And did, Joseph, you said you had daily fees. Now, was that because you are filming there and you probably then paid a different fee than you would go if you were just visiting there, right?
Well, that's for sure. But yeah. I mean, the average person when I was there last year, it was $200 a person a day, going up to $250 a person a day if there's only two of you. Three or more, it was $200 a day.
Wow.
And $250 a day. But you got all these other things that I was telling you about. But so that's the fee that everyone pays, anyone who travels to Bhutan. And but yes, of course, there are additional fees for permits and to be able to shoot and to be able to do what we do. Of course, there are.
And they limit the amount of visas they have per year, correct?
There are only a certain amount of approved travel agencies that are allowed to bring people into the country. So by doing that, yes, they're limiting the amount of people who can come into the country.
And again, I guess this is because they don't want an influx of too many people and too much influence to change their society. Is that the general idea?
General idea is that they don't want to happen there what has happened in many, 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 many countries around the world. Mexico, I think, is a case in point, where some of the most pristine, beautiful areas and the reasons that travelers wanted to go there in the first place become denigrated through over travel and a certain kind of travel, a certain kind of business that comes in, a certain kind of vacation that is being promoted, and one thing leads to another thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, And so that's one of the things they're trying to avoid. Uh-huh. They want people to travel in their country and to learn about their culture and to experience the beauty of their culture. They want trekkers. They want people who are interested in the festivals and into the history and into things to do with their country. They don't want somebody to come in, although there are five-star hotels there, and there are a number of them. But even those are built with a certain sensibility, and they don't want people coming in and raping and pillaging their country. Sounds like a great idea. But there are so many countries in the world mm-hmm. where there are people that benefit from the country being abused and used badly, and that's the way those countries go, and that's the way those beautiful destinations. I think of many places in Mexico that I traveled to years and years ago, and now how many Carlos and Charlie's bars do you need in a destination? You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we won't go into what happens here on Maui. Okay, we won't. We will not go there. But I could get myself in big trouble about what happens even here. But there is a truth. And then, I mean, I couldn't help but thinking, what happens if you have Shangri-La and you let people come to Shangri-La, you know? Do people try to recreate, hopefully people try to recreate the good they see in a place? And obviously, both you, Tom, and Bob, in doing your film, convey the wonderful lessons you've learned here. And it sounds like the same with you, Joseph. And so what's being conveyed by these wonderful pieces is that this maybe is the goal that we can try to recreate rather than go there and take it down and ruin it by going there, right?
Yeah, well, I certainly feel that. I mean, I think all of us, from what I understand, is we're educators. We work for PBS or working for shows that air on PBS. Our viewers are lifelong educators. Mm-hmm. People want to learn, evolve, and grow. And that's who I think my audience is. And so we are educators. We educate ourselves when we're in a destination, and we let a culture educate us, and we come back with ideas and experiences that make our life better and that we can bring back home and create Shangri-La, if you wish, here. And I think that is possible to do that locally as well, change the way things are. And certainly we all, I believe, have a certain perspective that we want to share with people. And in that way, we hopefully spread our positive influence to our viewers. And mm-hmm. I mean, that's I'm not embarrassed to say that's our mission as Travel Scope. It has been since the first day I wrote a story for the Los Angeles Times in 1980. I mean, it has always been the purpose. I'm kind of a child of the 60s, and I make no bones about it. And I'm proud of the fact of what we've done and the wonderful emails and letters and phone calls that we get from people who we touch and inspire. And I think that's what we all do, what we do, I hope.
I think that's the best part about travel is when we do inspire and we do have those moments. I've seen the moments on your films, Bob and Tom and yours, Joseph, where you really have the genuine communication and the sharing of the oneness of all people. And those are some of the magic moments that are sometimes captured on film, which inspires, I think, other people. And sometimes you could never script out things that happen spontaneously, right? Some of the great moments that happen that you could never put a script out to, but that happen when you allow that to happen. And you give magic a space to happen, right?
Exactly.
When you travel to that part of the world, you really can't have a solid plan and stick to it, because if you do, you're often disappointed. You have to kind of surrender to it all and just let it open up to you. And that certainly has happened to me in Tibet, Bhutan, and Nepal in particular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Joseph, I really appreciate your taking the time. When are those ones you just filmed in November? When's that going to be showing on PBS?
Well, our first show for season 7 will be released in June the 29th on the first PBS stations. You know, PBS is a very funny animal, and the stations are their own networks. So everybody airs their picks up the season. They all get it. Sent to them on our show. Our season will be sent to them on June 29th, but then they air it kind of when they want. Mm-hmm. But if they were to start airing a show on on June the 29th. The Bhutan shows are June, our show 9 and 10 in our schedule. So 2 months from that, so it looks like July, or beginning of September, the Bhutan shows will be airing for the first times on the first stations that have started airing the season right from the beginning. But, you know, everybody comes in when they want to come in. The wonderful thing about PBS is that it's a very independent type of thing.
Well, people can go to your website. It's a very nice website, travelscope.net, and there's information there about your trip that's coming up in September.
And, right. People, and there's promos to all the shows, so they can go there and see a promo to the two Bhutan shows. But, yes, travelscope.net and our trip to Laos and Vietnam, Cambodia, that's all on the homepage there. So, yes, we'd love to have people join us.
And the telephone number is 888-831-7526,
888. It's 888-876.
Oh, I'm sorry, 876.
2399 for us, but you're right, for the to tour, that's exactly right. You gave out the right number for the tour.
Well, it's always a pleasure talking to you, Joseph. I appreciate you taking so much time out of your day there, and, you know, say hi to Topanga for me, and thank you for doing such great work with Travel Scope.
Thank you, and thank you all. Have a great day.
Thanks,
Aloha.
Joseph.
Aloha.
Thank you.
Aloha. It's interesting, you know, hearing, you know, because I don't know if you've ever had a chance to see Joseph's work, Tom, but he really does have this wonderful feeling. He's a child of the 60s, but of course, you know, your roots come from there, and there is this wonderful feeling of joy, and it is off the charts of whatever happens. I also like that he goes to festivals and interesting places that you might not normally know about and see, and smaller areas as well. And I just wanted to say thank you again to Jerry, and this is the Travel Angel Show, Jerry Downer with Kalahani Travel, offering every week, some really special deals. And the deal that he has this week is a trip going from Athens to Venice on an extremely small, should we say an intimate cruise line?
Intimate cruise line.
Intimate. I mean, how intimate is it? How many people fit on this small ship?
45 cabins, 90 people.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And this first class, well, it's actually 5-star, right?
It's a five-star
with food and drink and tips all included, and that's going to be happening in July?
July 19th from Athens to Venice, 7 days.
And
total luxury, and the regular price is $75.90 per person. We have it for $36.05.
And what ports are you stopping at there?
The ship is stopping at, it's going through the Corinth Canal, it's going to Delphi, it's going to Corfu, it's going to Montenegro, Dubrovnik, Var, Zadar, and finally in Venice.
So it's going along some of the Dalmatian coast there.
It's doing Croatia, yeah.
I was in Montenegro last year. It's pretty interesting. It's a beautiful area.
And doing it on a small ship is something very, very special.
Now, I wanted to talk a little more. I wanted to congratulate you, Tom. Again, you're nominated for an Emmy. This is how many? You've been nominated how many times now?
This is the second time.
Second time. And this is for When the Mountain Calls, which you showed here first, I believe, it premiered on Maui.
That's correct, yes.
And it was really inspiring. It was a kind of a combination of a few of your journeys that you've taken, including a background of you starting years and years and years ago of your first trip. We have some fascinating pictures of you a long time ago trekking there. And where was that trek to? Was not Mount Everest, but
yeah, that was,
it was
Mount Everest back in 1983 when I met Tenzing Norgay and Hillary. Yep. On the trek.
And to find those pictures, right?
To find those pictures.
Great, great moments, right?
Another magical moment. I mean, you can't plan things like this. It's, I don't know if people have seen the film, but if you get a chance, check it out. Because, again, it's just one magical moment after another.
Yeah, and that kind of started, because that was your beginning journey. And so many great treks after that, while still maintaining. I mean, people have to be aware that, okay, you're working really hard. You know, this is you got your day job, and then there's these great films that you're creating, which are a lot of work, right? I mean, how many hours go into making a film like, say, the Bhutan film? How many hours would you even guess goes into making a film like that?
Well, first, let me just
almost
say, it's a team effort. Yeah. Without the team that we have, we couldn't do it. And but it really, it's
countless hours. You know, it takes months, and sometimes we're working full time on it, and then sometimes, you know, working on some other things.
And then there's always the improving, even after you get it done. There's always more,
And then there's, you know, you send it to PBS quality control, and they kick back and say, oh, you got some dropouts here or something like that from some of the old footage, you know, fix it stuff. So, you know, there's another 10 or 20 hours, and, you know. But it's fulfilling, you know. Not just, you know, for the Emmy Awards and all, but, you know, we get emails and phone calls and people who say, you know, we saw your film and we're just really touched by it. You know, it's airing on PBS right now, or public television across the country.
So there's really no way to know how many people have seen your work, right? Because this is going out to audiences all around PBS. And
yeah, that's true, because potentially it was picked up by about 200 stations. So if you think of that in terms of the potential, it's enormous. But
how would you say now, because since we are really talking about travel as an agent for changing the world and yourself, how have you found over the years, Tom, that you've been changed by these adventures and this, these travels?
Well, again, I have a PhD in psychology, and if I were to compare that to what I've experienced traveling, there's no comparison. I really have learned about life traveling.
That's amazing.
And about psychology, too. Because there's so much wisdom in these ancient cultures, Bhutan in particular, and of course Tibet and other parts of the world. But that's primarily what we're trying to preserve through some of our work, is the knowledge and the wisdom that's being lost. And we talk about the environment all of the time, but the cultures are being eliminated with globalization and the way consumerism, the way things are happening. So that's one of our biggest missions, and that's what the Angkor Wat International Film Festival is all about. That's the basic mission there, to preserve the environment and culture.
And you're able to kind of bridge different parts of the culture, because with the Angkor Wat one, you had that wonderful story. I don't if people haven't had a chance to see that very touching film that you found about the story of the man you work with here from Cambodia. And then you went back and he connected with his family. He hadn't seen in how many years?
29 years.
And he had worked, right, to try to help the government. Was he a translator?
No, he was in the, he was fighting the Viet Cong. He was in the Cambodian Navy. And the U.S. forces noticed that he was a wonderful, great soldier. So they actually brought him to Texas for extensive training. And while he was in Texas, the Khmer Rouge took over the country, and he couldn't return, or he'd been killed. So he ended up in the mental health world. And finally, we were able to connect and make his wish come true. Basically, he said, I need to heal. And by healing, he meant to go home and see if his family were still alive.
And he did.
We did. We found his mother and sisters and brother.
I mean, if you know, the world is so strange, how in the world would you ever guess there'd be a story like that? I mean, you know, and here's a story stranger than fiction, right? That's happening, and you were able to capture this beautiful story, which is, that is magic when you see things like that happen and able to capture it.
Yeah, the motive was not to make a documentary. I just took the camera along thinking I'll get some shots for him, but then it turned into a story.
And the story of when the mountain calls, it's almost like with the price you have to pay, doesn't seem like it should matter, because your passion for it is so great that you're going to make it happen, right?
Right. And, you know, Bob and I make these films, and it is a passion. It's certainly not the money at this point. But we're trying to make a difference in the world and put some positive energy out there. And I think Bob can attest to that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, Tom touched on this earlier, and part of it is just being, you can have a plan. It's like, I'm going to go to Bhutan, or I'm going to go to Cambodia, or
to Rwanda, or whatever.
And, you know, the objective might be to film something, or it might just be to go experience something. One of the things I noticed on my Rwanda trip is when I got back, some people said, well, did you meet your expectations? And then I realized, I said, you know, I try not to have expectations when I travel. Because if you have expectations, then you're looking for things to fulfill that or not fulfill that. Like, how is it going to measure up? If you just go open, and in some ways, like Tom was saying, kind of without a plan, you just have to be open to what happens and be open to the change and open to the experience, it's so much more fulfilling. you know, because it's like a newborn child, sort of. It's like you just take in what happens there without putting a label on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, with a lot of Tom's films and his traveling, he's done that. You know, it's like you don't really have a plan. You have a plan to go there. Maybe you have a destination or a goal, but you have to be open to what's going to happen along the way.
Including sometimes chances that you could have, well, when you went to Mount Kailash, you know, Paul Horn with you. I mean, and of course there were challenges with the altitude. I mean, it's a factor. I mean, I remember in Tibet how sick I got high at that high altitude. You never think you're going to get sick when you're, but at that high altitude, and I got dysentery in Kathmandu, didn't expect that either. But things happen, and you still have to be able to go with the flow and still try to maintain your center core. You don't want to, you know, you want to be able to function well, of course. But you've had many experiences where you just never knew what was going to happen, but it was part of the whole story, right?
The key to it all is you just need to show up and then go with it. Showing up is the hardest part because there'll be so many people trying to prevent you from reaching the goal of even showing up.
Mm-hmm. So,
and that happened in Tibet several times. And when we did show up, the magic occurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. That is true. Now, the Angkor Wat, you're coming up on your third year. And this year it's going to be a little more. I mean, Bob mentioned you're going to go 3D in Angkor Wat. It should be very interesting. But I'm sure at this point you have a few people who know about it and will be coming back because they've seen it happen in other years as well, right? And you're at this point becoming maybe well-known in the community and people look forward. I mean, so when you're going this year, are you going to do a little tour with it as well? Or are you going to be changing anything up around the next one? Is it February that the next one happens?
Right, it's in February. We don't have the exact date yet, but it would be a wonderful opportunity for a travel agent to get on board.
Well, here we go. I'd like to get on board. Would you like to get on board?
I've got some people actually going there in February. So.
You're kidding. Oh, how wonderful. Maybe we can tie this in with
it. Tie this in, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's, yeah. Well, you know, when you're doing something like Angkor Wat and things, you do need to plan in advance and make your plan somewhat in advance.
You need to make sure you have your visa, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the visa, yeah. How far in advance do you need your visa?
That can happen pretty quick online.
Yeah.
For Cambodia.
Yeah.
Cambodia is pretty easy online. I think I had mine within 2 days.
What was your first impression of Angkor Wat, Bob, when you saw it? I know you'd seen already the film, some film that was shot there.
Oh, Angkor Wat? When you look past all the well-trodden trails and the hundreds and maybe thousands of people that are there, if you can just tune into the energy of the place, you know, and the architecture, and I'd call it maybe the intention. You know, you're looking at ruins here, but if you look at it in a certain way, you can see the intention or the purpose of the people that made it, and it's really quite moving.
So what's your best tips, Tom, about getting around the thousands of people? That's another thing. When we see pictures, of course, there's not thousands of people in the pictures. We see the pictures that looks like there's no one there always.
Well, the reality is it's a city. I mean, it's a lot of space. So even with that in mind, there's lots of room there. The other thing is there are some interesting ruins right outside of Siem Reap. We went this last year, took about an hour to get there, and there were very few people there, and it was fascinating and incredible. So that's not the only place to visit, you know, in that area.
Well, that's good. That's a good tip. That's a good
right.
tip. Yeah. So when you're going, you're going to be going a week or two in advance of the to set everything up in Angkor Wat?
We pretty much have it under control now. I think probably a week in advance. Because we've got it down in terms of showing the films, and the hotel's very much involved at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's prime time there, so they're not even doing it to attract people to the area. I mean, they're truly doing it because they want to give back to the community.
I was talking with Bob one time, and he was talking about things that you don't expect. Was it Phnom Penh? Am I pronouncing it right? When you were there, and then there was the changing, and I guess the king had died?
Right.
Right, and so you're ready to do a shoot one day, and everything is completely shut down because, tell me that story.
Do you want to do
Go
it?
Ahead.
Well, basically, we came into Phnom Penh, and we were told that the the father king, who was basically revered as a god there, had died several weeks prior to that, and they were going to cremate him the weekend of the festival. And then, because of that, all entertainment was put on a halt. So we were unsure if we could even do the festival.
Wow.
And again, we showed up, right? This theme, we got into Siem Reap, and because we were showing one of his films at the festival, and also it was, you know, we do documentary films, so it's more educational. It wasn't quote-unquote entertainment. They allowed us to continue with the festival.
Wow.
We were the only thing going on in all of Cambodia.
that even smacked of almost entertainment. But, you know, Fabrice, the general manager at the Sofitel, really went to bat for us. And he explained, you know, to these folks, it's really a cultural event here. It's not an entertainment event.
You didn't sell popcorn?
No.
Oh, okay. Then it's not entertainment.
There's to be no celebrating. No. But we were still able to have, you know, our opening reception and, you know.
That's quite a story.
Some refreshments for people and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that was absolutely beautiful. They had the red carpet. They had the inside of the entrance decorated like an ancient temple.
Wow.
And open bar. They were serving food. They went all out.
Wow.
It was very, very elegant.
You can see photos on our website at AngkorWatFilmFestival.com.
And that's, you have a few websites, I know, but because When the Mountain Call, of course, that's got its own website as well.
Right, WhenTheMountainCalls.com.
So the Emmy nomination is up, and you're going to go to San Francisco to check that one out, huh?
Right, next month.
Next, what date?
15th,
right.
To San Francisco.
San Francisco.
Where in San Francisco?
It's going to be at the Hilton. Union Hilton.
Very, very exciting, huh?
Yeah.
Do you have a tux? Tux? Do you have a tux at this point, Tom, or are you going to be renting one?
I'm going to definitely rent one.
Well, you know, you get all of Maui holding their breath and crossing their fingers for you, and it would be such a treat. But just to even be nominated is really always a great honor. So that just because you don't make a lot of money on these films, so it's kind of nice to get that recognition, huh? you know, the time's almost up here. I want to let people know my new book, The Travel Angel Handbook, is out. You can go to thetravelangel.com. I have it in a hard copy and a ebook, and also as an app. And if you're going to take a long trip, it's a very handy thing to take with you. I want to thank you, Jerry. People can call you
thank at
667-2712 for any information on traveling, maybe even to Angkor Wat. And thank you so much for taking the time to come, Tom. And it's always a treat to see you, Bob. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cindy.
And a big aloha and to everyone. And I really, you know, I think you hopefully learned that happy travels to you all.